The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, online news editor of Science, is here to give us a rundown of some of the recent stories from our daily news site. Okay, first up, David, we have a story that seems to be an expansion of the hygiene hypothesis, the idea that dirt is good for us because it challenges our immune systems.
Right, Sarah. Well, this story is dealing with the biodiversity hypothesis, which is sort of a takeoff on the hygiene hypothesis. It basically suggests that the more contact we have with nature, and specifically the more contact we have with biodiversity in nature, so the more species we have contact out there in the wild with, it's better for us from a health standpoint. It may decrease the incidence of inflammatory and autoimmune diseases. Now, it's just a hypothesis, but this new study is all about trying to show whether it actually holds water.
Okay, so what kind of biodiversity do they measure?
This study was actually conducted in Finland, and they looked at 118 teenagers in Finland that were living in various parts of the country. And the biodiversity they were looking at was some of these kids lived in very rural environment, farm type settings where there's a lot of plants and a lot of trees and a lot of other stuff, whereas other kids had a lot less biodiversity. So they lived in larger towns, more urban environments, a lot less biodiversity around them. And what the researchers found was that, first of all, in what seemed to confirm the biodiversity hypothesis, was that the kids that lived in these more rural environments had less incidence of allergies. And allergies is one of these sort of autoimmune things that we deal with when we're sort of our immune system is sort of overactive. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't just the allergies. The researchers actually dug deeper. They actually took samples of the microbes living on these kids' skin. And, you know, we all have actually millions of microbes living on us, as unpleasant as it might be to think about. And they found that the kids that had less allergies and those that were living in these more rural environments had a larger number of microbial species on their skin. And specifically, they had a group of bacteria called gamma proteobacteria, which includes a member that's often found in soil. It's been linked to high levels of an anti-inflammatory marker in the blood, which means that these bacteria may actually be helping suppress the immune system enough to have it ignore allergens that would cause sneezing, itching, watery eyes, things like that.
So it might modulate an overreaction.
Exactly.
So is there anything that we should do in response to this study? Should we all move to a farm right. in Finland?
Well, the authors say, I was going to say the farmers say, but yeah, the authors say we all shouldn't become farmers just based on the study. It's not really practical for most of us. But they do say it suggests that, you know, when we develop in the environment, when we knock down forests and plants and we put up much more urban settings, we actually might be hurting ourselves in the long run because we're reducing the biodiversity that's around us. Mm-hmm. And this biodiversity may have a really important role to play in terms of our health.
That's a good point. Next up, we have a tale of an angry chimp and his contributions to science.
Right. Sarah, this is a chimp named Santino. And Santino is a very famous chimp, at least in Sweden, where he lives in a zoo. Santino's kind of a bad boy. As far back as a few years ago, scientists observed him gathering stones into piles in his enclosure. And when visitors would come up and take a look at him, he'd go for his piles, grab some stones, and start hurling them at visitors.
Why? He didn't like to be observed?
You know, they don't really know. You know, some chimpanzees are very territorial. They have, you know, these rigid hierarchies that they live in the wild, so it could be some sort of dominance display. One way or the other, he just wasn't very fond of visitors getting too close to his cage. While this sounds funny, it's actually hinted at something much more significant that scientists wonder about, which is whether other animals are capable of planning ahead. Now, when we see planning ahead, we're not thinking of things like squirrels hiding nuts for the winter. That's sort of more of a instinctual behavior. It doesn't really suggest that the squirrels are actively thinking about, well, it's going to be cold in 6 months. I've got to store these nuts, and in 6 months, I'll know where to get them. And it's also a very repetitive behavior. It doesn't really hint at very complex cognition. Whereas what Santino was doing sort of did, because he seemed to be gathering these stones in different places every time. So it suggested sort of more of a flexibility that he was actively thinking, you know, hey, if I hide these stones in a certain place, then I can sort of come back later and throw them at
somebody. Maybe I'll get a jump on someone.
Exactly.
So what's the new news on Santino?
Some scientists have sort of taken issue with this idea that Santino actually displaying sort of a human-like ability to plan ahead. There's a lot of scientists out there that say, you know, we tend to ascribe all of these human traits to animals, you know, even our cats and dogs, but we really don't know what's going on inside their head. They said, you know, just the fact that Santino's gathering a few piles of stones and throwing them at people isn't really good evidence that he's really thinking ahead and planning ahead the same way that we do. They really wanted more evidence.
He might not have intended victims, for example, when he put those stones together.
Exactly. So this new study, the researchers who conducted the earlier experiments went back, they observed Santino again, and they observed something different this time that they hadn't seen before. Santino would do the same thing where visitors would come and he would have these piles of stones, but he was also hiding these piles of stones in certain places, which the researchers hadn't seen before. When they looked through his enclosure, they discovered that he had 15 stones hidden under hay heaps that he had sort of moved around, 18 stones he had hidden behind logs, 2 behind a rock structure on the island, and a lot of these things he was sort of moving around so he could actually hide his stones underneath it. So it wasn't just that he was collecting stones, but he was perhaps putting these stones in specific hiding places based on, you know, maybe getting a better shot at somebody.
Sounds right? Very strategic.
Exactly. A very kind of sort of more strategic type behavior than they had seen before. And they say this is really much stronger evidence that Santino is really planning ahead. He's really thinking about, you know, the next time these visitors come, then the next time they come to this certain part of my enclosure, I'm going to get the stones that I hid under the hay pile, or I'm going to get the stones that I hid behind a log. Just a lot more sort of more human-like planning ability.
So does this study convince the skeptics about animal advanced planning?
Unfortunately, the skeptics, who actually sometimes refer to themselves as killjoys, or actually continue to be killjoys here, they say that while the study is provocative, they're still not convinced that what Santino is doing is actually evidence of the type of planning that we engage in.
I guess we'll never know his intentions.
We may never know.
So last up, we have a contagion that can jump across species.
Right. This isn't a virus or a microbe, Sarah. This is the contagion of yawning. And you probably sort of observed this in real life. If you are next to somebody who's yawning a lot, and I know you're doing it right now, and you're making me want to yawn, but this is actually a pretty common behavior in people. You know, when we see somebody else yawn, we want to yawn. Mm-hmm. And what's even more interesting is we're more likely to catch a yawn from somebody if there's somebody we're close with, you know, friends, relatives, things like that. And that's how researchers to suspect that this yawning contagion is a form of empathy. We're somehow sort of empathizing with somebody else in a way. And when they yawn, we want to yawn too. And it's not just seen in people. In fact, baboons do this with other baboons. Macaques do this with other macaques. And chimpanzees, we don't know if Santino does this, but chimpanzees do this with other chimpanzees. And it turns out dogs do this too. But what's unusual about dogs is dogs are the only animal we know of that do this across species. In other words, when dogs see us yawn, they also yawn.
And that doesn't happen with primates.
That doesn't happen with primates, at least as far as researchers have documented. And so this seems to be evidence, talking again about, you know, what sort of thinking animals are capable of. Mm-hmm. This seems to be evidence that dogs are capable of empathy as well. But, you know, just like there were skeptics with the Santino paper, there's skeptics here too that say, you know, we want stronger evidence. And that's what this new study is about.
So how do they study dog empathy in yawning, in the yawning behavior?
Well, in previous research, they had just sort of looked at dogs looking at people yawning. But they said, well, let's try to get a little bit more nuanced here. Let's really try to figure out what dogs are really responding to. So they wanted to test whether the mere sound of somebody yawning would cause dogs to yawn. To keep the dogs kind of not stressed out, they actually visited the dogs in their own home. They picked a few dozen dogs, and they recorded sounds of their owners yawning, of strangers yawning, and this control sound of a yawn sort of being played in reverse. And what they found is that when they tested the yawning on all the dogs, about half of the dogs they looked at yawned when they heard the humans yawn. And they were 5 times more likely to yawn when they heard human beings that they knew yawning versus when they heard a stranger yawn or when they heard the control sounds.
That sounds like pretty good evidence, but what's the Killjoy's take on this one?
Well, the Killjoy's take on this one is sort of similar to what they had with Santino, which is that, yes, this does seem to be stronger evidence, but again, we really can't get ourselves inside another animal's head. Maybe it's just some sort of learned behavior. The special things about dogs is they've been with us for tens of thousands of years, at least 15,000 years, and actually probably longer. They've developed these very close relationships with us. A lot of things that dogs do, we sort of think that they're really smart, and of course they are very smart, but sometimes it could be subtle imitations, just things that having been around us for so long, they pick up on. They're not necessarily thinking the things we're thinking, mm-hmm. even though it seems like they are.
Huh. Very cool. All right, David, what else is on the site this week?
Well, Sarah, for Science Now, we've got an intriguing new type of gene therapy that may more aggressively target a very aggressive type of brain cancer. Also, a story about why social jet lag is a health hazard, and you have to read more about that to figure out what social jet lag is. For Science Insider, our policy blog, we've got a story about some changes in the United States' national ocean policy. Also a story about an investigation into the mysterious death of a scientist in California. And finally, for Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, this week's Science Live is about the political brain. Why do conservatives and liberals view science differently? And next week's chat is tied to a special issue in science about conflict. And the chat is going to be all about why do we fight? So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
Thanks so much, David.
Thanks, sir.
David Grimm is the online news editor for Science. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.